The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
4, 3, 2, 1. Are we on the air?
I think we are.
I think we are. Hi, it's Leonard Maltin, and this is Maltin on Movies with Baron Vaughn.
And I'm Baron Vaughn. We're here to count on you.
Oh, my.
To listen to us.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
Let's adopt that as a slogan.
We're counting on you.
Or have someone else, some fat cat adopt it as a slogan and subsidize our podcast. Wouldn't that be nice?
That would always be nice. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Maybe say a team owner. A baseball or football team owner.
Yes. We want you to be on our team and not try to put our team under.
And why did I bring that up? Why did I use that reference?
Leonard, is there some sort of significance to that reference?
Why, yes, there is, Baron. Oh. We're going to talk about sports movies today.
What?
Yes, we are. Of course, there's so many to choose from, but we arbitrarily chose three.
Well, they're the first ones that sort of came to mind. Mm-hmm. I think two of the good ones were your recommendation, and the bad one was mine. The turkey.
And you will bear that responsibility.
That's fine.
Well, we want to start out with one that's just a good movie, a fun movie.
I might even say the only word that really describes it is delightful.
Yeah. That's A League of Their Own from 1992.
This used to be my playground. Some of you might remember that song by Madonna.
And I'm trying not to. But, really, we mentioned this before on earlier shows, but – you can't assume people have seen films.
That's true.
That are 20-some years old.
That's true. I mean, this is a film that I grew up on. It's from 1992, but a lot of you were born that year. Mm-hmm. So you can legally vote and drink if you were born in 1992. Let's not talk about that too long.
But it's true. So with each passing year, these films that you and I think of as not so long ago in our movie-going lives – are possibly unknown. I think if you're listening to this podcast, you have a curiosity about movies. I think we can assume that. So this may not apply to a lot of you folks, but I think folks in general, young folks that I've met, don't dig into the past.
Mm-hmm.
They watch current movies.
Well, there's so many current movies.
Yes.
There's movies coming out all the time, and then we forget that movies have been coming out for 100 years.
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of eras and styles and
I know. I went to a silent film screening here in Hollywood 2 weeks ago.
Oh, what'd you see?
Of a 1915, a rare 1915 movie starring the famous dancers Vernon and Irene Castle, who were portrayed by Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers.
Oh, goodness.
In a 1939 movie. And someone said to me, my God, this movie is 100 years old. It was a 1915 movie. It's 101 years old.
Mm.
Whoa. It is pretty mind-blowing.
We have been
making movies even longer than that. And as you go back 100 years, one century, the movies we're seeing are becoming more sophisticated in their storytelling. 1915, 16, 17, going to start to get into some – really first-rate films.
Yeah.
Chaplin is coming into his own around then.
Well, it's also
– it's amazing.
It's also really great that a lot of these old movies are being revitalized and being remastered and being offered up for people to see. And even you had that book where you discovered 300 new old movies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What was that book, Leonard?
Well, it's the third edition of Leonard Maltin's Classic Movie Guide presented by Turner Classic Movies.
I bet you that's
a
good
guide. Thank you for asking. And thank booksellers everywhere for having it. Well, all right. So we're going to talk about League of Their Own.
Now, this is something that's a classic to me.
It's a modern day sort of classic.
Yes.
And it was directed by Penny Marshall.
The great.
Who was then enjoying a good run of good movies. And it's written by the team of Lowell Ganz and Babalu Mandel.
Oh, my goodness, that duo.
And these are guys who came out of television, worked with Penny's brother Gary Marshall on his shows Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, and then made a wonderful film that we have discussed here called Night Shift. Just a terrific movie with Michael Keaton. directed by Ron Howard and Henry Winkler, of course.
Of course, from the Happy Days.
They went on to write the screenplays of very popular comedies, Splash, Gung Ho, Parenthood, City Slickers. They're still working, but I mean they had, again, a great run of success.
I want to say the first time I actually saw their names as the writers of a movie, I thought that was fake. I thought it was a sort of a pseudonym for, just a bunch of writers wrote this. But these are real people. These are two real guys.
They are. And two women get story credit on this. And I'm sure there's a story behind that.
A story behind the story.
Yeah, because it is inspired by a real-life situation, which is that during World War II, all able-bodied men were drafted into the various armed services, and women were put to work and put to use, both of those things, in ways they never had been before.
Rosie the Riveter was
Rosie
a very
the Riveter
big
being the emblematic symbol,
yeah, of that time.
Of
we can do it.
Right.
It said.
Women on the assembly line, women doing what were considered men's jobs, women driving taxis, driving trucks.
You know what's weird? They could do them. What?
Yes, exactly. And as
they are qualified?
And
strange.
As it's dramatized here, play baseball. Because so many men were gone, and so the teams were being decimated. And a character played by Gary Marshall here is inspired by, in fact, Mr. Wrigley of Wrigley's Chewing Gum, after whom Wrigley Field is named in Chicago. And it was Mr. Wrigley in real life here called Mr. Harvey, a Hershey bar type magnet.
Right, chocolate magnet.
Right, who has the idea of, well, let's put women on the field. Let's not give up baseball entirely. Let's not give up our income, our revenue from selling tickets to baseball games. And they recruited women. And so that's the basis for this. So it's based on a true situation. I think it's fair to say everything else is fictional in this film. Pretty much everything else is fictional. So as we'll warn you again with another film we're about to discuss, don't ever get history from the movies, from Hollywood movies. That's not where you want to learn your history. But if it piques your curiosity,
read on.
Read on, exactly.
Research.
But meanwhile, you can be entertained by this movie, which has just a swell cast led by the always likable Gina Davis. And Lori Petty plays her younger sister. They're farm girls who are recruited by John Lovitz.
Yes, a very cantankerous John Lovitz.
John Lovitz, a wonderful stand-up comic, was kind of an MVP of supporting actors.
Oh, really?
At this time. You know, he turns up in lots of movies and is always funny, always delivers as he does here. And then you have, in a somewhat unusual piece of casting, Tom Hanks as a drunken, washed-up baseball hero who was recruited by Gary Marshall's character to coach this one of four girls' teams.
Yeah, one of his best roles.
it really is.
Super fun, and there's a line from this movie that I think a lot of people know,
There's no crying in baseball. He's you know, he's such a good actor.
He really is.
He's not just a likable guy and a modern-day Jimmy Stewart and all these things that people say about him. He's a real craftsman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a solid and serious actor who takes his work very seriously, even if he doesn't take himself that seriously.
Very true.
And this performance is a great example because this is a guy who is just a washout.
Right. But he's brought back to life by the talent and the drive of this team, led by Gina Davis, who everybody is looking to as a role model.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And she's a strong, towering figure that can kind of do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's looking at her like, oh my God, how is she so amazing all the time?
And Hanks' character doesn't come around quickly or easily or speedily. And that's part of why the movie works, is it's not formulaic. It doesn't just hit the story beats you expect it to. And even when you think the story is kind of resolved, there's more.
Right.
There's more to it.
Right.
And it's another reason I like this movie. And then, of course, you have in the supporting cast quite an interesting assemblage of people.
Yeah. I want to specifically point out Rosie O'Donnell and Madonna, who sort of – they're almost the duo comedic relief, I guess you could say.
They are. And they're really good.
They're very funny in it.
They're really good. And they obviously took the job seriously, and they give good performances.
Yeah.
And Madonna does a great Lindy Hop too.
That's right. There's a huge dance scene.
Roadhouse scene.
Yeah. Huge dance scene.
One of the team players who doesn't get a lot of footage or a lot of screen time, there's a faux newsreel at one point where you see her knitting in the dugout, is Tracy Reiner, who was Penny Marshall and Rob Reiner's daughter.
Oh, okay.
They were once married, and this is their daughter, Tracy. So there's a lot of people who populate this.
There's also a face that you see, which is Taya Leone. You see her for like 5 seconds altogether, but it's like, oh, look.
It's an interesting film because it does depict a situation that a lot of younger people don't know about, which was that women were liberated from the kitchens for this period, liberated from the household chores, given rather remarkable opportunities, and had to endure a lot of
sexism.
this is another word for it. A lot of sexism, a lot of condescension, mm-hmm. a lot of patronizing attitudes. David Strathairn plays Gary Marshall's kind of
he's sort of the person
promoter,
who's
publicist.
In charge of making this league work.
Right. And he does because he finds the promotional angles. And even the women on the team who are reluctant to use sex appeal and obvious, you know, things.
Like a uniform that is a skirt.
Yeah.
Essentially, which kind of comes back because in the movie, these women are playing.
Yeah.
And having your legs exposed when you're sliding into second is going to cause some damage to those legs.
Yeah. But they catch on too. They catch on. All right, it's all means to an end. They want to get people to watch them and value them as good, capable, in some cases superior ball players. And if what it takes to get to that point is to do a little exploitation –
a little song and dance, which also happens in the other movie we're going to talk about.
Then so be it. But what's going to happen when war
ends?
And that's another issue in this film. So we don't want to give away more than that or talk more
about
that.
No, but I also do want to talk about Gina Davis and Lori Petty's their chemistry as sisters. And it is – I mean I guess I can say that this movie is standing on – it's on Gina Davis's shoulders to make this movie work, and she really does make it work. I mean I say she's a towering figure because not only is she tall, but she feels tall on screen.
Yeah.
And she is a presence that everyone is looking to for advice, is looking to for guidance. And unfortunately, Lori Petty's character who plays her sister hates her. She's been in this shadow.
She doesn't hate her, but she resents.
Right, it's a sisterly sort of hate, sibling rivalry, and to play it out to the X extent because they actually are playing on teams. And if you know the movie, the team changes, but I don't want to say too much more about it. But it is it's a fantastic movie. Is all I can say.
A lot of fun.
I've loved this movie for so long, and I've seen it a lot of times.
I hadn't seen it in a long time. I was very happy to watch it again. It's a it's a good movie, folks.
It's a good movie. It's well made. It looks great.
And if you, like me, haven't seen it in a long, long time, you'll have fun watching it again. And with that, we're going to move on to the turkey of the week.
Uh-oh.
But not without taking a little break. Should we give a hint about the turkey of the week?
Well, let's just say this is a movie. Sometimes a movie can come out and it's not good. And that can happen on any given Sunday.
What a hint. We'll be right back. Today's episode of Malton on Movies with Baron Bond is sponsored by Howl FM. We think you're going to like what you hear with Howl. It's kind of like Netflix for podcasts. With Howl Premium, you get exclusive access to more than 120 hours of Howl originals, featuring exclusive miniseries, comedies, and documentaries, with new episodes added every week. You get all the archives from WTF with Marc Maron and all the Earwolf and Wolfpop shows like Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made, and Our Little Show. Plus more than 60 great comedy albums, including Baron Vaughn's Raised by Cable. Get access to all of this exclusive content on your iPhone, your Android phone, or on the web for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTIN, that's M-A-L-T-I-N, you get a full month of free trial. Nothing to lose. So to redeem your promo code, make sure you create your account on the web at Howl, H-O-W-L dot F-M, and then enter the code MALTIN at checkout. So go to Howl F-M, use the promo code MALTIN, and you'll get a one-month free trial of Howl Premium. Check it out for yourself. Listen to Spalding Gray, or Forgotten Classics, or the Canon Commentaries, or something cool. There's a wide variety of material available to you, and I think you'll enjoy checking it out. And thanks to Howl for sponsoring.
Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. I'm Baron Vaughn. Across from me is my teammate.
Yes. Yes. Loyal teammate.
The shot caller, the playmaker, the GM of Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn,
Mr. Leonard Malton. Oh, I never thought of it that way. Yeah. That's interesting.
LM, the GM.
But then I don't think in terms of – I was always terrible at sports.
So was I.
Awful. And when my daughter – I got about the fourth grade or so in school and started playing team sports, and we had to go to her basketball games and soccer games. We were always encouraged, being 21st century parents, to only yell positive encouragement, nothing negative. Good try! You know, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Nice effort. When I was a kid, nobody did that.
Right, right.
You stupid, you idiot!
Yeah.
How could you drop that ball? That's all I ever heard. Not from parents, but my teammates.
Of course. That's what teammates are for, you idiot.
So I went back inside.
I thought too much. I mean, I was relatively okay at sports. I was pretty good at like baseball and basketball, but I would think too much when I was playing, and you can't think. You just have to react. That's part of what's electric about sports is watching how people react in the moment. You know, mm-hmm. You have your idea of what's going to happen, and then in the moment, you have to adjust around that. Sometimes it goes horribly wrong, like this movie we're about to talk about. You have a plan, and then you say, but you know what? It's going to take me 2.5 hours to execute this plan.
At least.
At least.
Oh, dear.
We're talking about a movie called Any Given Sunday.
Yep.
Directed by Oliver Stone.
And co-written by?
Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone. It's directed in 1999.
And only 7 years after A League of Their Own.
I thought it was only 7 years long. I thought you were going to say about the movie.
It does feel like it's 7 years long.
He did, as he does sometimes, he presented an alternate director's cut.
Oh, did he?
At one point, yes. But as he did with Alexander, I think he had three different director's cuts of Alexander. Goodness. The problem is I can't find the 3 hours in my life to invest in an alternate version of a movie I've already disliked.
Hey.
You know, it's tough. I mean, I want to be fair if I can. But if I've already seen the movie that's been released and reviewed that, it's going to take a long rainy day for me to get around to.
Because there's so much to see.
That's right.
Other things that are going to be great.
That I would rather see.
Other Oliver Stone movies that are good, actually.
That's right. And there are plenty of those.
Yes.
I have a lot of respect for Oliver Stone. No disrespect intended.
And this is a situation where I feel like he's trying to make a point about what the football industry is.
Yes. But he does it in the first five minutes of the film. In the opening, maybe even 3 minutes of the film, which opens with bone-crushing violence on the field.
Yeah, he really leaves himself nowhere to go.
So you've got crushing violence, clashing egos, a little bit of sex, a lot of hypocrisy. You see the team doctor in the first moments of the film, you know.
Played by James Woods.
Right. A player's injured, and the player doesn't want to show the fans how seriously he's hurt. He wants to be able to get himself up off the ground and get off the field so he'll get a cheer.
Played by.
And the doctor, you know, rallies that on.
Yeah, yeah.
So you see hypocrisy right away.
Right.
And then you see the pissed off owner, played by Cameron Diaz, of the team, whose father built the team from scratch and whose reputation still resonates throughout the team headquarters and the skybox.
This place is haunted by him.
That's right.
But in a positive way.
So you get all of that
in
the first 5 minutes.
And then there's another 2.5 hours.
Exactly.
Of the movie. And you're seeing – I mean, there's Al Pacino – Okay. Jamie Foxx, LL Cool J. You got Lawrence Taylor and Jim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You got Cameron Diaz, who you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. James Woods, Dennis Quaid.
Mm-hmm.
Just a hell of a cast.
Yes,
a lot of really interesting people in this. Lauren Hawley, Lila Rochon. There's a lot of different people in this movie. And that's why there's a lot of movie, because there's too many people.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to have a scene.
Yes.
Oliver Stone is even in the movie himself.
Oh, yes, with a loud jacket playing
as a sportscaster.
Yeah. And John C. McGinley.
Yes, as a sports reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. It's an overfull movie, and he makes his point, I think, way too many times.
Yeah. It's you know, I had a struggle to get through. I couldn't get through the whole film again, I confess.
Do you remember when you originally saw it at all?
Yeah, I remember my reaction to it then. It was exactly the same as my reaction to it yesterday when I was watching it at home. My gosh, you know, is it over yet?
This is
and
one
yet,
of those –
And yet, you know, a friend of mine has a supporting role, a small supporting role in this movie.
Okay.
And he told me – he's worked for Oliver Stone several times. And he told me that his part was drastically cut. To which you can only say, you mean there was more?
Yes.
They went into production with a script that was even longer?
It had a cut that was longer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Now, this is one of those movies that generally people who watch films, if you will, if I want to make that weird semantic distinction between movies and films, people who watch films don't like this movie. But people who watch movies love this movie. Yeah.
Well, I would think if you're a football fan, which I confess I'm not. There would certainly –
there are better football movies though.
Yes, there are. Are you a football fan?
I'm a little bit of a football fan, but I'm a fan of football movies.
Right. Okay.
I'm a fan of sports, but I'm a bigger fan of sports movies.
Yeah.
Because sports movies can give me some stuff that I don't get out of regular sports, I guess.
Right.
So there are really good football movies, and this is just – it's a fan favorite. It's a movie that I think did okay in the box office. Mm-hmm. But I remember when it came out in high school because everyone I knew was talking about this movie.
Mm.
Everyone I knew. I saw it in the theater. People walked out and like, I can't you believe how amazing that was. And I remember even in high school being like, I don't think it was that good.
I mean, it does capture the energy of the game. It does capture – I mean, the editing is very flashy and very effective.
But that's too much.
Camera work, yes.
I think that it goes overboard.
Yeah. And it captures – you know, if you have no acquaintance with it, it certainly gives you an idea of the behind-the-scenes politics and procedural nonsense that goes on at a major league team with between owner, coach, manager, all the way down the pecking order to the players.
To the third-string quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Jamie Foxx plays a guy who makes his mark by – ignoring his coach and doing some
– calling some audibles that are effective.
Some fancy stepping and making a success for himself but not for the team and not for the coach, not for the poor beleaguered coach played by Pacino. So again, all these ingredients are there, but you can watch them in the trailer, folks.
And by the way, it's Pacino. It's not Al Pacino. I want to make a distinction.
Go ahead.
Sometimes you get Al Pacino in a movie and you're like, wow, this is one of the greatest actors of our time. And sometimes you get Pacino and it's just this idea where Al Pacino is doing a Pacino impersonation and you're like, oh my God, it's still fun to watch.
Yeah.
But it's just like as the biggest way, the biggest he could possibly be when he's big and no one can do big like him.
Oh no.
Where it's Pacino, all caps.
Yeah.
That's who we get in this movie.
Oh, I forgot Anne Margaret.
Yes, of
Anne
course.
Margaret, who doesn't have a lot to do.
Yeah, she plays Cameron Diaz's mother, the widow of the past owner of the team.
Yes, the slightly inebriated or
slightly
or perpetually inebriated, I should say.
But you know what? I got to say, there's some good performances in this movie.
Oh yeah, the actors are fine.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz is actually really good in it. Mm-hmm. Jamie Foxx is good in this movie.
That was one of his first showcases, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to say for Cameron Diaz, for myself, it was one of the times that I was like, oh, she actually. She has some stuff to offer. Like, she can actually act. Mm-hmm. Like, because I had just known her from The Mask, I guess. And I think There's Something About Mary had already come out.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, she's like being a powerhouse. And I believed her.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I want to see what she's going to do. But this movie, not so much.
Not so much. Oh, and Clifton Davis. Nice to see him playing the mayor of Miami.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And he's one of those actors that you don't see that much.
Yeah.
More of
a theater actor, really.
Yeah. And I remember he had a TV career as well.
Mm-hmm.
Showed up in some shows that I love.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, any given Sunday.
Yeah. You can choose which version you want to watch. I don't know that you're going to get a good movie no matter how you slice it.
And choose a given Sunday far away from this one to watch it.
But we have a good one to go out on today.
Oh, yeah.
We have a real good one to go out on today. And it's one that you might not know because it's now, unbelievably, 40 years old.
Ooh, oh my goodness.
Doesn't seem it, but it's 40 years old. And it was a Motown production.
Yes.
What could it be? You'll find out in a minute.
This summer.
You sent her, you monster.
The world's greatest screenwriters.
So it appears it is to be a chess match, after all.
And Hollywood's brightest actors.
How do you just stop believing in it all?
Will come together.
Eventually, you will slip.
In a cinematic explosion.
I hope you trip and break your bloody stiff neck.
The likes of which podcasting has never seen.
Whew, end of the goddamn world, huh?
The Blacklist Table Reads takes the best screenplays from the famous Blacklist website and brings them to life with cream-of-the-crop talent and beautiful sound design. It's like a movie for your ears.
You have no idea how committed we are.
The story continues every week with a new movie every month. The Blacklist Table Reads, hosted by me, Franklin Leonard, and not in the movie trailer voice. Check it out on iTunes, at wolfpop.com, or on your favorite podcasting app. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Baron Vaughn. He's Baron Vaughn.
And he's Leonard Malton.
And we're about to discuss a Motown production, personally produced by Berry Gordy. And it's called The Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings.
That is a lot of words.
Came out in 1976. And I enjoyed it then. I enjoyed it all over again when I just revisited it this week. It's a very entertaining movie.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that I've always heard of, mm-hmm. but never actually got a chance to see. So mm-hmm. I was happy to get to see it. It stars America's two favorite black actors with three names, Billy Dee Williams and James Earl Jones. And it's young James Earl Jones as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
James Earl Jones with his original teeth. And then we've got Richard Pryor, you know, in a supporting role, but so funny. So funny. He's Richard Pryor. So that's great.
He's barely in the movie.
Yeah.
In fairness, we should say he's barely in the movie.
He's barely in it, but he's memorable.
But he's good. Yes, of course. We shouldn't give away his joke because the joke's too good to spoil.
No.
We won't. There's a line of thought.
A recurring thing that comes up and he executes it perfectly.
And it was the first feature directed by John Badham. John Badham was a young guy who, somewhat in parallel to Steven Spielberg, came along and established himself in television and directed a lot of TV, a lot of episodic TV shows like The Bold Ones and the Rod Serling Night Gallery.
And
a lot of one-shot TV movies, and was obviously a talent, an up-and-comer. This was his first theatrical feature.
Hmm.
It was followed by a little something called Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
So he's done well. And he's had a few ups and downs in his career, but he is now back up on top doing a lot of television, producing and directing. And he's on a show now called Arrow.
Yeah.
Supernatural. And he's been teaching. He's been teaching film.
Wow. I didn't know that he was directing Arrow, but that makes a lot of sense.
He may be producing, not directing, but I think he also has directed on that show as well.
Okay.
But this was his first feature, and it holds up.
Didn't know it was his first feature. That's amazing.
It holds up, and it was written by Hal Barwood and Matthew Robbins, who were hot at that moment, having just written Steven Spielberg's feature, The Sugarland Express.
Mm.
And they followed that with Corvette Summer, not quite as successful. And then they did some individual work as writers and producers. Matthew Robbins directed Dragon Slayer, The Legend of Billie Jean, Batteries Not Included, stuff like that. But this is one of their best. It's based on a book by a novel named William Brashler. I confess I'm not familiar with that author.
That's fine.
But they did a very good job in this film. This film, like A League of Their Own, is rooted in truth. The truth being that there was such a thing as the Negro Baseball League.
Yes.
And that existed separate and apart from Major League Baseball.
You might say even separate but equal.
and had a solid audience.
It did.
They had a following.
Well, because these were tremendous athletes.
Yes, of course. Satchel Paige being the most famous.
Right. There was a little known HBO movie that Delroy Lindo played Satchel Paige. Mm-hmm. But this Bingo Long character played by Billy Dee Williams is based on Satchel Paige.
And the point of the movie really is that these guys, though they're not in the white major leagues, are being just as oppressed and mistreated as any athlete of any era by the black owners.
Yes, specifically
these teams.
This character named Sally, a man named Sally, mm-hmm. who is just, yeah, he's skimping on their wages. He's docking them left and right. He's throwing his weight around.
Yeah.
And they don't like it, so they come up with a solution.
And James Earl Jones' character is an educated man, a very progressive thinker, and he persuades Bingo Long, the more lighthearted and, you know, non-serious? What's the word there?
Yeah. Devil may care.
Yeah, character, that they should take hold of the situation, not allow themselves to be
exploited
and kicked around by these owners, become their own owners, start their own team, even their own league if necessary, and become barnstorming baseball players. And that's the crux of the movie, is how they get out there, manage to make their own way, try to elude the crooked
owners
and vengeful.
Yes.
Vengeful owners
is the right word.
And still make a living and still enjoy playing baseball and attract crowds. And that's what the movie's about. And it's an entertainment. It's not a history lesson, though there's, you know, snippets of history
in it. There's history in it, but it's not a documentary.
People. No. It's just a really entertaining movie with a terrific cast. And, at one point, much like the women in A League of Their Own, it's pointed out to them that they want to get a crowd. They're going to have to put on a parade when they come to each new small town. And some of them are reluctant to do that. Oh, we don't want to showboat for these people.
Right.
And then later on the field, maybe if they fool around a little bit, and give them a little showmanship. And James Earl Jones' character
says— A little clowning.
Right. Says, I ain't going to shine for no white folks. And Billy Dee says to him, no, we're in on the joke. They don't have to know it. Mm. We know what we're doing. We're doing it purposefully. And we'll get what we want out of it.
Because they're also winning these games.
Yep.
It's just like they're joking around, fooling around, but also win these games.
Yep. Because they're good. They're good. So you want to see a film that is just, as I say, a pure slice of entertainment with a superior cast. Wonderful period atmosphere, too. They shot it in Georgia. Mm. Long before Georgia was giving oodles of money to people to shoot there.
That's right.
But they shot in really interesting, dusty, small towns. There's no studio work here.
Just some good location scouting.
You can tell they really picked and chose their locations well. And it's not just – there's more to a period film than just buying up or renting old cars. It's more than that.
It's creating a period.
Yeah.
Creating a world.
You really do get a feel here. For the 1930s, and I don't know if it spills into the 40s. I think it's mostly 30s.
Yeah, I think, and, all takes place in the 30s.
That's right.
In the Midwest, they're
– It is 30s it. Because there's the coming of the war.
Yeah.
There's reference to Hitler and his rise to power and the imminent war in 1939. It's got a very lively, fun score by a man named William Goldstein, whose work I should know, but I don't know better. But obviously, Berry Gordy took a shine to him because he worked directly for Berry Gordy for a long time.
And Berry Gordy was Berry Gordy, so right. He would know a good composer.
Yep. And there's some songs sung by Thelma Houston.
That's who that is. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
And there's all these wonderful actors.
It's just a hell of a movie. You know, it looks great. the chemistry, because this, again, this is a movie about a team.
Yeah.
So the chemistry and all the different, you know, the connections that they have and the triangulation of all these different relationships and all what everybody wants out of this project that they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's realized in a way where it affects the story, it affects the characters. So it's like, it's never for nothing. It always goes somewhere, and it's quite good.
Now, just to give you some context here, I did a timeline.
Oh,
because I was curious myself where this fell in the careers of those leading actors.
Yeah, I did too. I looked at Billy Dee Williams.
So Billy Dee Williams had made "Lady Sings the Blues" in 1972.
Oh yeah,
and that's I think what really established him. And then he did Mahogany, reunited with Diana Ross from Mahogany in 1975. And then came this, Bingo Long. And that's 4 years away from Lando Calrissian.
Yes.
So that's kind of a rough idea of his
that's right.
career journey.
This is 76 and Empire yep. Strikes Back was 80.
James Earl Jones, who film buffs know has a small part in Dr. Strangelove way back in 1964
what?
For Stanley Kubrick.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. He's got lines. He plays one of the Air Force pilots.
Oh my goodness.
On the bomber plane. You can't miss him. You can't miss
him. I'm going to have to watch that again.
He became a star on Broadway in the Howard Sackler's play The Great White Hope, which was then filmed in 1970. So that's when movie audiences really first got to know James Earl Jones.
Yeah, it was one of those rare things back then where you could be a Broadway star and then they'll be like, we're going to make a movie of it and put the entire cast in it.
That's right. Didn't happen often, but it happened then, thank goodness. And he kept working alternating stage and film through the 70s. But this was, I think, his first or one of his first really solid leads in a commercial Hollywood-type movie.
Mm. And he's great in it.
And he's wonderful in it. 2 years later or 1 year later, he played Malcolm X in the film about Muhammad Ali, The Greatest.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then that same year, he did a voice of some guy with a black hood. You know the one I mean.
Billy Dee and James Earl Jay both ended up in the Star Wars way.
That's right. Richard Pryor had made his debut. Well, he did some sort of funky films in the late 60s, but he too is in Lady Sings the Blues in 1972.
Yes, which was a big splash for him. Right. A lot of people were like, oh, Richard Pryor can act.
Yep, playing Piano Man. And then he did Uptown Saturday Night in 1974, and then came this in 1976. And right after this came Car Wash and Silver Streak and Greased Lightning and all those other films that represented the pinnacle of his movie career.
Yeah.
Not necessarily his stand-up career, but his movie career.
Right.
So in the smack dab in the middle, you have the Bingo Long, Traveling All-Stars, and Motor Kings. It's available. It's watchable.
Yeah, I think I saw it on Amazon.
Yep. And what an enjoyable film it is. As I say, not meant as a serious piece of American history or a primer or a lesson or any of that. Just fun.
A fun film.
So we recommend it, as we do A League of Their Own. Those are our two picks of the week.
The two biggest titles are the ones we're recommending.
Yep.
Any Given Sunday.
Yeah.
Watch it on a Tuesday.
Watch it on a slow, dull, desperate Tuesday, maybe.
It will get your adrenaline pumping because
yeah.
Movie doesn't stop, but I also think that's one of the problems with it.
Yeah. It never ends.
Yes.
That's what you meant to say.
It doesn't stop and it never ends.
Both of those things are true. And that's our little survey of sports movies. I'm sure we'll come back to this subject.
Yes, definitely.
So many to choose from.
I believe I watched A League of Their Own on Netflix. It's also available on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And Bingo Long is available for rent on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's it for this one.
We've done it again.
Yeah, we've gotten to the last quarter. Right before the shot clock runs out.
Mm-hmm.
Goal! Okay, That's
a very small goal announcement.
It's a very small goal, yeah. It's got to go for a lot longer.
All right, fine.
As long as Any Given Sunday, it's got to last as that.
Friends, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for telling your friends about us. Baron, where can they find you?
Me? Well, I'm on the Twitter with the BARVONBLAQ. What about yourself, Leonard?
I am at Leonard Maltin on Twitter, and I'm on the web at my website, which is leonardmaltin.com.
Oh.
Come and visit anytime you like.
Do you talk about this and that over
there? I do all the time.
Perfect.
Endlessly, kind of like Oliver Stone.
A little bit more succinct.
Oh, yes, I would hope so. My gosh, I would hope so. Thanks again. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, Earwolf listeners. This is Hillary Frank from The Longest Shortest Time, where we ask the hard-hitting questions.
What will happen if I don't have a shadow? What does the Tooth Fairy do with her tooth?
Am I the real Batman?
Who's Jesus' grandparents?
John Willis, age 3, bringing out the big guns. I'm actually, like, rattled.
The Longest Shortest Time. It's the parenting show for everyone. Listen at longestshortesttime.com, earwolf.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Pop. Pop.
Pop.
This has been a Wolf Pop production. Executive produced by Paul Scheer, Adam Sachs, Chris Bannon, and Matt Gourley. For more information and content, visit wolfpop.com.